南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Happy to see you here. Thank you for being here, for all your support. Sifu Sylvain with you. We're continuing with the Essay on Gratitude, a translation of the Overseas Promulgation Society, Nichiren Shu. I'm not going to start this video with a tirade. Nope. Not going to do it. This is a very interesting Gosho in that, if you don't recall, is a letter Nichiren composed and sent with one of his senior disciples from Minobu to Sesshoji, the temple where Nichiren spending his alma mater, if you will, his mentor, his teacher, his main teacher at Sesshoji has passed away. And so he commemorates that passing with this writing on the of gratitude to be read by his senior disciple to the other monks, the existing monks of Sesshoji. And he takes the opportunity to edify, would be probably the correct word, the memory of his master at Sesshoji by writing his doctrinal scholarship, his evolution of thought on his analysis of several major points on the practice of Lotus Sutra Buddhism. And so this letter ends up being quite a comprehensive teaching of Nichiren's doctrine, this having been written in the last, they say 1276, he died in 1282. So this was the latter part of Nichiren's scholarship. So it's quite well developed. And so without further yakety yak, blah, 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 as I often call it, let's get back into it. We now reach a section he's labeling Doubt About the Supremacy of the Lotus Sutra. Someone may wonder, he says, among the sutras transmitted to China and Japan, not one may be superior to the Lotus Sutra. But there are numerous sutras in India, in the Dragon Palace, as it were, in the heavens of the four heavenly kings, in the sun and moon, and in the Trayastrima heaven, abode of Indra at the top of Mount Sumeru, and Tushita heaven, abode of Bodhisattva Maitreya, it may be possible to find a sutra among them which is superior to the Lotus Sutra. End quote. In response, I would say that we can judge in general by observing one instance. We can see what is going on in the world without going out of the door. Ignorant people who look at the sky only in the south without looking at the sky in other directions may think that there is a sun in each direction. Seeing smoke hanging over a mountain, they may say that it is not a fire because they do not see any flames. Those who think in such a way, you should know, are Ichantika. They are nothing but blind fools. So he's not going to mince any words here, is he? The comparative superiority of all the sutras preached during 50 years or so by Shakyamuni Buddha is declared in chapter 10 of the Lotus Sutra, Shakyamuni's own sermon, yeah? Quote, the teacher of the Dharma, end quote. Quote, I have expounded numerous sutras. I am now expounding this sutra. I also will expound many sutras in the future. The total number of the sutras will amount to many thousands, ten thousands, and millions of them. This sutra of the lotus flower of the wonderful Dharma, Myoho Renge Kyo, is the most difficult to believe and the most difficult to understand, indicating its profundity, right? Even if this statement of the Lotus Sutra were uttered by Shakyamuni Buddha alone, anybody from the highest ranking bodhisattvas down should respect and believe in it. If that's all we have to go on, I mean, this is Shakyamuni, right? The Buddha of many treasures, coming from the Eastern Hojo world, attested to this truth. Besides, various Buddhas in many manifestations from all over the worlds in the universe gathered to verify its truth. Quote, with their long and wide tongues extended to the Brahma heaven, end quote, just as Shakyamuni Buddha did, and returned to their respective lands. Again, that expedient device of indication of the teaching, the tongue spread out, and the length going into till it disappears into the heavens, is an indication of the endurance and the spread of the sermons. Remember, the sermons, all of Shakyamuni's teachings were delivered orally and were memorized orally. So the tongue, see, is the visual device, the storytelling device, to encapsulate that teaching, spreading. Did the tongue spread over the land? Did it spread over the entire world? Did it spread right out of the world into the infinite universe? Different levels of propagation, of being heard, if you will. Yeah? By the way, if you hear noises in the background, grinding noises or long, you'll hear a hum of motors probably. The neighboring property is doing bulldozer work, and sprinkled on top of that will be my little dog rolling around and snorting with her broken nose, making rude noises. Lest you think that's my stomach growling. Just in case. All right, continuing. The three phrases of, quote, already preached, being now preached, and going to be preached. It's a statement made several times in the Threefold Lotus Sutra, right? Include all the sutras preached not only by Shakyamuni Buddha during 50 years or so of his preaching, but also by all the Buddhas from all the worlds in the universe through the past, present, and future. Well, of course, this is Shakyamuni's teachings. And in another way, instead of using the tongue analogy, he's saying, by all the Buddhas, these aren't other physical, they're nothing like Shakyamuni. Shakyamuni uses the personages, the mental characteristics of other instantiations of Buddha-ness and their respective skill set or story, the context of their manifestation as separate Buddhas, but Buddhas, they're all Buddha. They're just storytelling devices. So it's curious on the one hand, he validates Shakyamuni Buddha's teachings, very obvious, by Shakyamuni's own teachings, self-validated, right? But then he says, and this is true of all the Buddhas, past, present, and future. Well, because they're all emanations of Shakyamuni Buddha. So there's this constant, I'll call it a dance, as we read these ancient documents of trying to reach different people's capacities. Some, even though they're students of Buddhism, some people still require that this storytelling dance in order to gain insight as to what is meant by the teaching. Still today, I suppose, I think most of us aren't halted by that, but I think that that's still, you know, we learn, all of us learn in different ways. Our minds have certain pattern-seeking abilities, and I mean, why are we reading the Gosho? Because we need to filter through these different pattern-making ways of what is insight, after all. Insight isn't seeing something new. Nothing is new. It's only appears new because it's suddenly perceived differently by our minds. You know, it's that old argument. Do we invent or do we discover? Ultimately, what the distinction doesn't matter, right? So, moving on. These numerous sutras are all compared with the Lotus Sutra. Suppose that these Buddhas from other worlds in the universe, who presented themselves as at the assembly of the Lotus Sutra and added their seals of approval, should return to their respective homelands and say to their disciples that theirs is a sutra superior to the Lotus Sutra. Would their disciples trust them at all? Because the statement's already been made that the Lotus Sutra is supreme amongst all teachings prior, during, or after. This is the central point of Buddhism. Buddhism. I'll say it that way. We're all instantiating our Buddha. But it's not a personal Buddha. It's our personal local experience of Buddha. The clear alacrity of our mental abilities to perceive the reality, the profundity, the preciousness of each moment of observing the process of life in all phenomena. With that clarity, we can release all of our foibles, our stresses, our fears, because there's nothing to fear. Fear is a contrived thing of the mind because of attachments to the very idea of attachment, which is the illusion. There is no attachment. There's just flow. Right? You can spend your life trying to swim upstream and you'll be exhausted. If you just let yourself be in the flow with everything, suddenly it's a lot easier, isn't it? Life becomes easier. As we cannot see this with our own eyes, we may wonder whether or not there are sutras superior to the Lotus Sutra in India, for instance, or the Dragon Palace, places of the four heavenly kings, and the palaces of the sun and moon, or their gods, their whatever. Were not the king of the Brahma heaven, Indra, the gods of the sun and moon, the four heavenly kings, the dragon king, present at the assembly of the Lotus Sutra? Well, certainly they were enumerated, right? So in other words, when the Sermon of the Lotus was delivered, it was delivered to every conceptual mental space, deity, past, present, future, all of them were included in this ultimate teaching. That's the device, right? If heavenly gods who were present at the assembly, like those of the sun and moon, say, quote, you may not know this, but there's a sutra superior to the Lotus Sutra, they are absolute liars. Because they were there. They heard the truth. So this is Nichiren using the context of the expedient means within the Lotus Sutra itself to demonstrate how can you have any doubts about the superiority of the Lotus Sutra when the teachings that you're judging themselves make it obvious, explicitly obvious, that the Lotus Sutra is the superior. It's the very goal of Shakyamuni's intent since the get-go, yeah? I, Nichiren, would charge them declaring, and this is what Nichiren would say, in other words, to any who would question the superiority of the Lotus Sutra. So let's see what he says. It is due to their merits in keeping the precept of not telling a lie that the sun and moon stay high up in the sky as securely as we human beings stand on the earth. If they should utter such a lie, as there are sutras superior to the Lotus Sutra, they would fall before the kalpa of destruction, and this world would come to ruin. They would not stop falling until they hit the bottom of the hell of incessant suffering. Such inadmissibly deceiving beings could not possibly remain in the sky even for a while orbiting the four continents which surround Mount Sumeru. So the very laws of nature, the very observances we have of the conditions of life would all self-destruct if they did not agree that the ultimate teaching is Myoho Renge Kyo. That's what that says. Now, I suppose this is a sort of a preface because this next part is titled The Mistakes of the Masters, where things might go awry, and what we need to point out as mistakes, the emperor has no clothes, he's naked. Somebody has to point out, because people are, for whatever their motivations, all on this boat of delusion, politically, fear, participation, being part of a club, whatever their reason, people are actively working against the obvious truth. Why? So Nichiren's going to start to talk about that. Nevertheless, those great masters of wisdom such as Chen Quan of the Qigong school, Subhakarashima, Vajrabodhai, Amoghasvajra, Kobo, Jikaku, and Chiso of the Shingon school claim that such sutras as the Flower Garland Sutra and the Great Sun Buddha Sutra are superior to the Lotus Sutra. Why do they do that? Especially given what I just said, why did they do that? Or did they do that? Because he's talking over a large swath of time, right? We may not be in a position to criticize these masters, but Doesn't the overall wisdom of the Buddha tell us that they are dangerous enemies of Buddhism? If you're going to misinterpret Shakyamuni's ultimate teaching, you may be in a position of authority with a great deal of enforcement, but that doesn't mean that you're not. In fact, the fact that you have that much influence makes you an even greater enemy of the truth. They are far worse than Devadatta and his follower, Kokalika, comparable only to Mahadeva and Brahman, the boaster Daiman. How frightening it is to believe in such people. And here we have the crux of Nichiren's advent, his entire doctrine, as he rails against these other would-be teachers calling themselves the authorities of Buddhism, using Buddhism for their own gain, for their own power, for their own political advantage. You know who I'm thinking about as I say these things, right? But I said I'm not going to have tirades, so I'm not going to do it. But you know who I'm talking about. Question: are you saying that such masters as Chen Quan of the Qigong, Qi Xiang of the Sanran, Tzu'en of the Hoso, and Subhakarashima, Amagasvajra, Kobo, Jikaku, and Chiso of the Shingon schools are enemies of the Buddha? Yes. I'll let Nichiren answer. This is most serious. It is a matter of prime importance in Buddhism. As I examined Buddhist scriptures, however, it became clear that any person who says there is a sutra superior to the Lotus Sutra cannot escape the error of slandering the true Dharma. According to the sutra, these people can only be called enemies of the Buddha. In other words, Shakyamuni called this out. If I did not point this out, Nichiren says, because of fear of them, the comparative superiority among all the sutras of Buddhism would not be revealed. And I have been criticized personally for saying controversial things. Well, the only reason they're controversial is because people are falsely misled. The truth is the truth. It's not controversial. Calling out people who say the emperor has new clothes, if you think that's controversial, it's because you've bought into the lies. Somebody calling on you with compassion to wake up and see that the emperor is naked, that's not controversial. That's bodhisattva. If I did not blame them and called only the descendant scholars of the Qigong and Shingon schools of today enemies of the Buddha, the latter would probably say that it was not their fault to claim that the Great Sun Buddha Sutra is superior to the Lotus Sutra. They would say that it is the founders of their schools that established such a doctrine. They were the liars, not me, but you're promulgating it. Though they are different from their founders in observing precepts, in wisdom, and in position in society, the doctrines that they have learned are exactly those of their founders. So they're not to be blamed, but their founders should be. So I'm not sure why he says that. Unless what he's saying is that if they're doing it out of ignorance, that's one thing. But once it's demonstrated to them that they're following incorrect teachings, they should self-correct immediately. Right? So this next part, very brief, speaking up against the slanderers of the true Dharma. Here we go. To all of those who've criticized me, listen up. If I, Nichiren, did not speak of this because of my fear of the people, I would be betraying the Buddha's admonition in the Nirvana Sutra, quote, not to hide the teachings of the Buddha even at the cost of life, end quote. It's incumbent. If you really, think about it, if you're really practicing with conviction, if you believe in your Buddha nature, if you're practicing, chanting to invoke Buddha, how could you not? How could you not react to somebody who says, you're just chanting magic words? No. Oh, Buddhism is all about meditation, nothing else. No. You must say, no, you are incorrect. The ultimate practice taught by Shakyamuni, the originator, the founder of Buddhism, is the Lotus Sutra practice. If you don't know this, then you have not studied Buddhism. No, Buddhism is about just sitting on a rock all day trying to make yourself disappear. No, you are not practicing Buddhism. If I can't say that, then I'm not practicing Buddhism. It's not complicated. If I am to speak it up, interesting translation, I am afraid I shall suffer persecution. But if I do not proclaim this, I will not be pardoned from disobeying the Buddha's commandment, his exhortation. What should I do? I am in a dilemma. It is not surprising that the following can be found in the Lotus Sutra. Quote, many people hate the Lotus Sutra while with jealousy, even in my lifetime. Needless to say, more people will do so after my extinction. Chapter 10. And quote, many people in the world would have hated it, and few would have believed in it. Chapter 14. End quote. Shakyamuni knows this is going to happen. It's the nature of any truth. There's always going to be people who react without mentally considering an optional way of thinking. They will recoil, even if they don't have another position, another to posit a different. There's something about human nature that often feels like a truth is a confrontation. And what is that? That's an expression of attachments. I like things the way they are. Don't change anything. I like them the way they are. But I'm not trying to change anything. I'm just trying to get you to see something, the same things, from a different perspective. Right? We've all done it. And we live in a world today, if you look around, if you look at the news, if you look at politics, It's all about that problem. This next portion is called Difficulties Experienced by the Buddha. So Nietzsche, and you see what he's doing here. He's hitting all these target points, these bullet points, if you will, in the parlance of today, of these contentions with the truth. So let's see what he says about difficulties experienced by Shakyamuni. When Queen Maya became pregnant with her child, the future Shakyamuni Buddha, the demon king of the sixth heaven, saw through her womb and said, quote, "The queen is pregnant with a sharp sword called the Lotus Sutra, the Myoho Rengekyo, which is our sworn enemy. How can we eliminate it before it is born?" So she must have had a difficult pregnancy. That's right. Pretending to be a great doctor, the demon entered the palace of King Suddhodana and talked to the queen and talked her into drinking poison, saying it was a medicine effective for easing childbirth. Now, we don't know the political situation. Suddhodana was a very powerful, it was a warring clan, right? They were a very powerful clan in India at the time. So, yeah, how many... In the West, how many Shakespearean sonnets and tales and stories do we have about, or go back to Greek mythology, if you want to end the reign of a certain emperor, king, powerful family, when they go to breed to make a successor to the throne, they have to protect that queen because there'll be sorts of attempts on her life, attempts on her offspring before it's born, after it's born, right? There's endless tales about this. So is it a surprise that they have the same thing going on in India? No, it's the same thing. At the very moment when the Buddha was born, when Shakyamuni or Siddhartha was born, the demon caused a rain of stones to fall and mixed the baby's milk with poison. When Prince Siddhartha left the palace to become a monk, the demon king at this time pretended to be a black poisonous snake blocking the prince's way. Furthermore, the demon king entered the bodies of Devadatta, Kokalika, King Virudaka, and King Ajatasattu, making them throw huge rocks at Shakyamuni to draw blood or to kill members of the Shakya people and Buddha's disciples, Shakyamuni's disciples. I mean, these are all documented stories of the lifetime of Siddhartha, his family, his journey through his searching, his spiritual search, with different Brahmins and so forth. Lots and lots of stories about this. Nichiren is just putting them all, the highlights, right, in a linear way to show obstacles. Obstacles to the truth. The nature of samsara. The nature of attachments. What is it to be a prince? A prince of the Shakya clan at this particular time. These are all earthly attachments. The hell of incessant suffering. So Shakyamuni is no stranger to this. Enlightenment is no stranger. Our Buddha mind is no stranger. This is why I keep saying there's no annihilation here. There's no... Life does not go away when you magically attain this clear mind. It simply is completely understood and non-stressful because you see it from a completely different perspective. It's still here. If it were not, then you couldn't experience Buddha. Let's go on. These almost fatal obstacles to the Buddha were the work of the demon king of the sixth heaven to stop the Buddha from preaching the Lotus Sutra. It's difficult to tell the truth. It shouldn't be, because the truth is just the way it is. But there's this resistance, and that resistance comes from delusion. Delusion by virtue of attachments to things that ultimately don't matter, don't exist. They're just temporary manifestations. But we want to own them. We don't want to lose them. We want to accrue more. That's samsara. That's our desirous nature. And it's a good thing we have a desirous nature, otherwise we wouldn't exist. We are manifestations of desire to what? Exist. But somehow we don't have that shutoff valve when we're growing up to understand that we're here. Now we can enjoy and experience the magnificence of being here. No, we're still trying more. Stop. Take it. Stop. Settle. Right? They are what is referred to in the Lotus Sutra chapter 10 on the teacher of the Dharma mentions. Many people hate it with jealousy even in my lifetime. Right? How can you be so assured? Who are you to say the emperor is naked? But when everyone starts accepting, oh yeah, the, not let alone the emperor, don't, how can we be so stupid? Right? But that's quite a cosmic shift in the mind. These were the difficulties the Buddha experienced quite early in his lifetime, and many terrible difficulties awaited him later, since Shariputra, Madhagalayana, and the other great bodhisattvas could not believe in the Lotus Sutra. They, in spite of living close to the Buddha, were the worst enemies in the 40 or so years before the Lotus Sutra was preached. They knew there was something there, but man, they resisted. They resisted. They didn't want to let go of their possessions. I don't mean just their stuff. I mean the stuff in their minds, their thoughts, their ways of understanding the world. It's hard to let go of some of that. Even though they were desperately trying to learn from Shakyamuni Buddha, they harbored enmity toward him because he forced them to confront themselves on levels they were not comfortable confronting themselves. How many of us do that? These things happened in the Buddha's lifetime, and in the future, more horrible difficulties will probably occur as predicted in the chapter which says, quote, it will be worse after I die. Well, here we are in the land of fake truths, alternate facts, and just absolute mental craziness. How can ordinary people bear those difficulties while even the Buddha could hardly bear them? How much more so as the difficulties we are to face are said to be more tremendous than those that the Buddha had encountered? No difficulties seem more horrible than Devadatta's attempted murder of the Buddha with a huge rock 30 feet long and 16 feet wide, or King Ajatasattu's attempt to hurt the Buddha by releasing a drunken elephant. Nevertheless, according to the sutra, we shall encounter difficulties greater than those. You ever absolutely know something as true just to have people around you ridicule you, make fun of you, and completely deride you as you're nuts, you don't know what you're talking about? And it's so obvious to you, so true, and you're just powerless to get to convince them because your words just, they just laugh at them. They don't hear you. You ever had that frustration? Believe me, if you haven't, if you ever do, I'm sure you have at some point in your life. Boy, that humbles you. The powerlessness you feel, the vulnerability you feel, it's crushing. You start to doubt yourself. And this is the lesson why, because Nietzsche knows that if we're to practice with ultimate resolve to attain our Buddha, that's the kind of thing we have to combat. Not other people's derision, our doubt. That's the most incipient enemy. That's Dairoku Denno Mao. That's the devil king of the sixth heaven. That personage is the very thing we have in our own minds that gets in our way. That's all the lessons of Buddhahood. One who often encounters such difficulties through no fault of his own must be a practicer of the Lotus Sutra after the Buddha's death. Go back to your butsudan. Chant. Remind yourself of your resolve, of the truth. Don't let doubts creep in, because they will destroy your practice. And you'll notice in very short order that your life falters. That the quality of your life is diminished. You'll know it. All right. Difficulties encountered by the transmitters of the Dharma. So he's going one by one here, following the dominoes, right? So before we read about our difficulties, that'll be it for this video today. We will continue with that portion. This is great. It's kind of a seminar on the history and the practice of Myoho Rengekyo, the Buddhism. And we are going to get, you can see the steps we're going through. We are going to get through to the Daimoku, and he will dissect that as well. In the meantime, please understand this practice, this conversation that we're having, albeit online, not face to face. The amount of, I don't even know the word, pride, appreciation, gratitude, awe. Your practice has such immensity. Thank you. Namo Myoho Rengekyo. Thank you for participating. Like, subscribe if you haven't already. Download the podcast to your liking. You can listen to them anytime. Look through the bookstore to see if there's anything helpful in there. You can buy my translations of the Gosho Zenshu without all of the stupid rhetoric in it. Just the clarification so you can really get it. I'm still not decided whether I'm going to do this with this group of translators or not. Certainly could use a good cleansing, that's for sure. Keep your practice strong. Take care of your health. Be kind to yourself. And I'll see you in the next one. All right.